Welcome to Share Talk, the only podcast where investors come first.
Hello, everyone. Tonight we have an audience or an evening with Paul Johnson, CEO of Power Metal Resources. I think last night it was Adele, but tonight it's Paul Johnson, which is a slight contrast. But I'm sure we'll go into the nitty gritty of his life story and everything else at some point later in the presentation. But first off, just to get things going, Paul, some questions from investors. Does that sound like a good way to start?
Yeah, fine.
All right. So first one, which may be quite critical in the near future. The first question is, if the market stays depressed, will the planned spin-off be affected?
Okay. So I suppose the first thing to say is that the market is utterly depressed in the junior resource space. And I don't want to over-depress people out there, because I appreciate people are looking for optimism, especially in shows like this. But I think over the years that I've been investing in natural resources, it's occurred to me through numerous up cycles and down cycles that the money is made in the down cycles, which sounds a little bit strange. It's when, as a private investor, I felt the most tested. You know, the nerves are jangling, the depression and frustration kicks in, the capital protection mode kicks in, where you're thinking, I need to sell now because my money's disappearing out of the window. And when you feel at the worst possible level from an investment perspective, where you're turned off and you are thoroughly depressed, is the moment when, generally speaking, the market is a short way from recovering dramatically. And I've sold myself at times like this, and then seen just a couple of weeks later the share price that I've sold two or three times higher. And I think the market's out to get me. So going back to your question, will it slow things down? Well, we are something of a steam train with our business. We've set out our strategy. People may find from time to time that they don't agree with all of our strategy, but you don't pay me as a CEO of a company to wax and wane with every trend within the market. You pay me to lay out the strategy, to push ahead and to deliver. So our primary focus is getting these spin-out IPOs done as quickly as possible. Of course, when we get to the IPO point, if the markets are in a dreadful state at that point, you may choose to slow things down. But I want to get these vehicles ready for listing. And that requires a whole heap of work to be done. And that's what we're doing right now. And we will get that work done as quickly as possible. And barring a disastrous market, we will bring these vehicles to market as soon as we can.
I mean, but the question, I suppose, is why is the market depressed? I mean, we're coming out of the pandemic allegedly. We've got a lot of inflation, which should help metals prices at least, even if, like, you know, we also have supply chain issues. So people who want metals, for iPhones or cars or whatever it is, they're having to pay more. Wouldn't that work in your favor?
Well, it does, but is it the Mark Twain comment, the market can stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent? And I think, look at all the indicators, you run through them, supply attrition, there haven't been mines or new discoveries. Mines brought online or new discoveries made in the quantity needed for a long period of time. There hasn't been the investment in the sector. There is a dramatic amount of demand coming down the pipeline. And interestingly, the people who want to buy the metals, the governments around the world, who are trumpeting, green policies, perhaps don't fully understand the lack of metals in the system to supply those policy objectives. We've had underinvestment for years. We've got an inflationary environment. There will be a move into hard assets, and commodities are an important constituent in that group. And we are going to see a tremendous, tremendous uptick in metal prices, and we're seeing it now. And look at the price of nickel, copper. Gold has had a bit of a dip, of course, very, very recently, but has been above $1,800. And silver's showing some signs of strength. Uranium, lithium, cobalt, I could go on. There is a tremendous demand coming down the road. The stocks, the metal stocks, have been declining for a long period of time and getting to almost historic levels in some cases. So we're seeing a tremendous opportunity, but there's a disconnect between that metal environment and the junior resource companies that we all know and love, or perhaps we hate at the moment. That disconnect will close. It closes either with metal prices falling dramatically or the prices of the juniors rising dramatically. And in my investing life in the junior resource space, these disconnects close rapidly and furiously. So I think it's a hang-on time, in fairness, in the space. That's what I'm doing with my portfolio of investments in junior resource companies. I'm a little bit blessed because I work so much on the power metal business, I don't have too much time to look around and to worry. But if I did worry, I'd take myself back to the numerous times in the last dozen years where we faced this situation before, and it has always come around and it's delivered dramatic upside on the investment portfolio.
And but there does seem to be a disconnect between the metals prices, which in some cases have risen very sharply, but the share prices of the companies with, you know, with those metals haven't moved. Is that slightly worrying or disconcerting?
No, I think it's just a question of timing, to be honest. One of the challenges in our space is that you don't see too many wealthy AIM investors around. But those that you see that have big positions, if you go and ask them in their investing lives, have they been through traumas, you know, difficult periods? Have they lost large amounts of money on the way? And almost to a person, they will say, yes, I'm sure of that. Because the process of building up your knowledge and experience in our space is quite painful. And that's the worry that I have, that people will be spooked dramatically by what's happening in some of these share prices, including my own with power. And they will go for a default to safety. They will worry about the future, sell down their positions, and then they'll be sat with that cash, or, you know, that they've got out of that disposal process, and potentially watch as the share prices rise dramatically. And they're left with that original pool of capital that they dragged out of the markets, kicking and screaming, seeing share prices run away, and they become priced out of these opportunities. I think we're facing, from my personal experience and what I see all around me right now, the most dramatic forward-looking market that I've ever experienced as an investor in the junior resource space. So if you can hang on and get through this phase, however long it lasts, whether it's another day, week, month, 3 months, whatever, I think you'll come out of the other end smiling, well, more than smiling.
Okay. Second question, how does placing fit into or shape current plans or business strategy?
Okay. So this is the financing. We raised 1.05 million 7 or 8 days ago, announced to market. We have a developing and growing business. People have seen the transactional stuff that we've done. Occasionally, I see comments that suggest it may be a haphazard process that we've been through. It hasn't. It's been very carefully put together, bit of a patchwork quilt on occasions, building this business up and its various constituent parts. We've got to a point within our business where we have a number of our projects, quite a number actually, where we see dramatic potential. We get a lot more information, of course, in the heart of the business than is necessarily available at any point in time in the wider market. Specific price sensitive news is always released, but, you know, the business is much wider and more in depth on a day-to-day basis than you see in the, you know, the news releases that are published at any point in time. And we felt that we wanted to have the flexibility to expand our operational programs in certain cases, both upfront pre-discovery and also in anticipation of discovery. We felt we wanted to be able to get behind the corporate work that we're doing with the spin-out IPOs and to push them more aggressively. And the reason for that is that in the midst of an absolute crisis in the junior resource sector, which is what it feels like now, we think we're just on the cusp of a major recovery. And therefore, we need our vehicles to be ready faster. And also, we built our business in the last 3 years, mainly in the downswings in the sector. Because when things are going great guns, assets are very, very expensive and difficult to acquire. People have optimism. When things are in a tough phase, then opportunities become available. And it's important to be ready for those opportunities. And we've been working on a number of initiatives. And we want to be ready to move if we need to. And having additional capital enables us to do that. So we hadn't raised any money through a financing since July 20, That was the last time. So doing this financing, what is it, 16, 17 months later, it's been quite a long time since the last one. We raised a modest amount versus the market value of the business. It was 4.5% dilution, and it was done at the market with a warrant that was 100% premium. I've looked around recently, Zach, and I've seen numerous financings done at horrendous prices, slashing the legs away from the investors. You know, if you buy a share in Power on market, you will not wake up the next day to find a heavily discounted placing under my watch. And that's what we fulfilled when we did that raise. I would dearly have liked to have raised at a much higher level, but the markets don't deliver always what you want. But that money is really critical for us to execute on our business plan, is to do what we think we will have to do.
Right, slight overlap question from somebody who's watching now, from Navjeet. I understand the benefits of IPOing assets to allow for fundraising, having the assets sitting on POW's balance sheet. Yeah. But by the same token, won't the balance sheet also hold the liabilities of the IPO, negating the benefit? So I'm not quite sure you can understand that or not.
No, okay. So moving a business unit into an IPO has a cost attaching to it. There are costs of doing the IPO process itself. It depends on which market you list on, and they range to between 250,000 all the way up to £600,000, because you have to pay for accountants, corporate advisors, lawyers, competent people, and that kind of thing. Then when you get on the market, then you're a free-running vehicle. You raise your own finance, you have your own management, and you can drive that business unit forward much faster than if it's a small part of a much larger organization. And that's the aim with this, is to get these IPO vehicles running, independent, cut the umbilical, as it were, from the parent company, Power Metal Resources, have more energy devoted to them as a focused unit, more capital available, which we don't have to provide as Power Metal. Now, there is a crossover period in the middle where we need to stand behind these vehicles and to provide some finance for the early stage work required for the listing, and that's what we do. But there is a point I would like with each IPO to come out to market and announce that we have cut that umbilical. The vehicle is running separately. And the point to do that, ideally, will be after a pre-IPO fundraise, when that vehicle, not Power, to be clear, but each vehicle goes and raises some initial seed capital to pay for its own listing and to pay for the general work that company needs to do prior to getting on the market. And as each one of these announcements goes out for each of the vehicles, announcing that they are now a separate entity, self-financed, self-managed, self-driven, then it will be a great day and people will start to see the business model coming to life.
All right. Question, sort of earlier question. The continued acquisition of more land packages has still not had a positive effect on the share price and makes some shareholders question their investment in POW. Is POW spread too thin?
Yeah, that's interesting. Back in 2016, when I was CEO of Metal Tiger, we invested 150,000 in Greatland Gold, and we 0.1 pence, believe it or not. And that was the comment that stood out then. People said we were doing too much, we're investing in too many different things, albeit that was our job as an investing company. I'm an operator now in the role CEO of POW. We can not only take investments in certain things, but more importantly, we can focus in operational activities. We can build a real portfolio that we have control over, which is the key thing. I made a choice in my life when I took on this business. And this is, I suspect, probably in terms of my roles, this type of role is my last role in a public company in this way. But I made a choice that I would like to make a significant amount of money. And I could have made a significant amount of money to a degree if I just picked a vehicle and then had two or three projects in it. And then just did the normal stuff that companies do, wait for the positive cycle. And if I invested enough cash in my own company, then I could probably make a few million quid from it. But I'm not going for a few million quid in this business. I'm going for 50 million quid, 40 million quid, whatever figure you want to pick. And I that requires me to make some life sacrifices along the way. It requires me to work pretty dramatic amounts of time in the business. And I'm helped now because I've got some brilliant people, many of whom are watching tonight, by the way. So I need to be careful what I say. But I have fantastic people in this business who are coming in and helping me. Serious technical people, serious managerial people, marketing people, administrative people who are helping me to build this company. And we wanted to go big with what we were doing. So have we taken on more than you would expect in this type of company? Well, yes, because the expectations in the marketplace is that we, as PowerMesser, would follow what everybody else does, which is, largely speaking, lifestyle businesses with modest amounts of work requirements and modest portfolios. We've gone big. We've built our portfolio out far bigger than it needs to be for our vehicle. But what it enables us to do is to create spin-outs. We wouldn't have done many of these or acquired many of these projects if we didn't have the spin-out model. You know, because it would be too big a portfolio for one small company to hold. We'd like look like the junior version of Rio Tinto. You know, there is a limit to what one vehicle can actually work on and make significant progress in a reasonable amount of time. So we've gone for the big model. We've gone for the big portfolio. We've gone for the spin-outs creating value. We've gone for more projects than we necessarily would expect to see in a vehicle of this type. Even after all of our four disposal spin-outs are done, our business still has 11 projects spread over three continents, you know, covering eight commodities. Even after the four spin-outs that are slated at the moment are done, we still have a large business. And our game, Zach, as you know, is a numbers game in part. You know, the odds of finding major discoveries are tiny. Now, we have the best people picking and choosing the projects that we take on. That narrows the odds. We've always kept ourselves financially solvent, good, strong financial position, and that narrows the odds because we can do real work. But ultimately, you need a little bit of the numbers game as well to increase the portfolio diversity and size because it increases your chances of success. It also spreads you across different commodities, and each commodity will have its day in the sun. It doesn't always stay in the sun. So you need to be able to flexibly move around. So yes, have we spread ourselves too thin? By normal expectations, I agree. But this is the power metal business, and it's different to the normal.
All right. So, I mean, on that, you mentioned Great and Gold, which is obviously a badge of honor, et cetera. Does that mean, actually, that in order for this particular power metal project to win, you need to find a Great and Gold?
Okay. Well, it's a badge of honor because it shows what our market can do. The market cap of Greatland in early 16 was 1 million, and it went to 1 billion 5 years later in early 21. And I suppose it's a badge of honor because after following the company for years, I felt it was a suitable target to refinance and restructure when I was CEO of Metal Tiger. And we did the job, and Metal Tiger made a large amount of money from it. I had a personal holding. I made a large amount of money from it. I made nowhere near the amount of money I would have made had I have held on to all the stock. But that's the nature of our markets. You know, when you're investing at 0.15 average and then the share goes to the 2 or 3 pence, you know, people take money off the table. That's a normal thing. Never did we expect that you'd see a share price go up into the 30s as it did in early 21. What was important at that point in 16, Greatland Gold was not loved, surprisingly. It had quite a few years on the market where people almost despised it. And we had to not just refinance, we had to restructure, bring in a management team. And Gervais, of course, was central to that and became the CEO eventually and built that business up. Javier on as a project was just, I think, coming in as Andrew Bell, who was on the board as well, and I were stepping off. And that ultimately was the project that drove the price to the sky. Do we need to find another project like that? No, we don't need to find another project like that. That is a bit of a one-off, in fairness. Have we got a shot at a project like that? Well, we have a very close comparable at the moment in the Paterson region in our first development resources spin-out package. which is magnetic bullseye targets, deep undercover targets, the same kind of methodology as was followed to find the Javier on deposit discovery. So we've got a pretty close, you know, comparison to have a crack at. But we've got within our business multiple large district scale opportunities. We're sat in some cases next to some cracking, you know, existing to be mines or mines with what we hope is similar geology. But I think we have to have a modicum of success across our business with its different elements of corporate work and exploration work to see and justify a dramatically higher value. If we end up with a Javier on two, then we all know where this is going to go. But let's not hold out too much hope for that because it's a long shot.
Okay, somebody's actually Navjeet again. 6 months ago, I believe you tweeted or RNS, we're on the cusp of a major discovery. Has that position changed, or is it still is it relevant or not?
Well, I suppose we slammed into 1.7% nickel sulfide in Molopo, in the Molopo Farms Complex project in Botswana. That's where the company currently has a circa 52% effective economic interest. We did three deep drill holes, 500-600 meter drill holes. And for junior companies to be embarking on that kind of drill program is very rare, in fairness. You're seeing it with Kavango at the moment. And it takes a lot of guts to actually spend the money to do that kind of work. On the second hole, K16 in Molopo, we hit the nickel sulfides we were targeting. Absolutely fantastic result. We, of course, need to move that project forward. We're doing further work on that, technical work, and we're doing further assay testing. So there's lots of news to come from the program that's been undertaken already, but we need to crack on, and that's important with that particular interest. So on the cusp of a discovery, well, you know, technically, maybe we've made one with Molopo, but we need to just really kind of consolidate what we've got so far. We've got drill programs that have been running at multiple of our projects. We're waiting for drill results from some of them. And we've got a lot of programs that are slated to happen in the near term across multiple project interests. When you start drilling, and particularly when you're doing proper deep drill programs, you're always on the cusp of finding something. We wouldn't invest in drilling unless we were confident that there was something of interest there. So across our business now, there are probably seven or eight of our projects that are on the cusp of something significant. Will we get there? I don't know. But we got enough irons in the fire to give us a decent chance.
All right. What would you say, sort of general question, what sets Power Metal aside from its peers? Will Power Metal benefit from a commodities super cycle? And if so, how? So I suppose we've touched upon this already.
Look, this game's about foresight. It's about buying the interest before they become popular. It's about positioning yourself in places people don't necessarily understand at first and being the one to find the discovery. It's like, again, go back in 16 with Metal Tiger when we invested with MOD. Well, it was actually in 15. We invested alongside MOD in the Kalahari Copper Belt. I got abuse like you wouldn't believe. Why was I investing in the desert? It was a waste of investors' money. I was being careless. And then we slammed into the T3 copper discovery in Botswana, and the share price rocketed and everyone made a load of cash. You know, we're in the foresight business.
So that's interesting, actually. Why do you, I mean, it seems to be, it's a bit like, you know, Hollywood, you're only as good as your last film. In the mining industry, you're only as good as your next discovery. I mean, it doesn't matter. You could have just turned up from being a bus driver and just turn up and say, I'm Paul, I'm CEO of this mining company. And yeah, you'd probably be more popular. So why is that? Why is there that kickback and knockback? And, you know, as if you've just, you haven't done anything before or you've failed before.
I think because we're such a violently cyclical market that people get taken through a whole heap of emotions and the memories are quite short. It works the other way as well. You know, when we lift off in this space, and we will really lift off, and I'm sure Power will lift off with the market, as with all the other shares. And when that happens, within 3 months, then the pain and the discomfort will be forgotten. You know, people, if they see the share prices go up three, four times, they won't be talking about how difficult it was. in November. They'll be talking about how much money they're going to make. And in our case, and it's probably right, actually, Zach, you're only as good as your next discovery, because the chance of making a discovery is so damn low. And most of the companies in our space across the world have no desire to go and drill projects, because a drill program can kill a fantastic exploration project overnight. You know, if you don't get what you're looking for, it's a risk to do this. It's a risk to go out to the market, because we have to. And we have to say we're going to put our reputation, our capital, our corporate share price, our sustainability on the line to do a drill program, to go and check with the truth machine, as they call it, whether our project has any value. Now, we can do that because we've got multiple other things. We can take a chance. If we drill something and it doesn't hit, okay, we might have a wobble, but we've got so much wobble on the share price. We've got so much going on in this business, in a normalized market, that we can crack on and keep going. Now, fortunately, so far, we haven't really had to get rid of much because it hasn't worked. We've walked away from the Ivory Coast project that were one of the original Legacy 3. We stopped investing in the Cameroon projects, again, another of the Legacy 3 from back in 2019 when we took control of the company. But we carried on with the DRC, which is the only original project. But people, I think, understand how much risk is involved in this. And whatever directors tell you, including me, about how optimistic they are, the odds are shockingly low that you will find a discovery. So I believe that what directors need to do is to reduce those odds as best they can with diversification, proper people on board, analysing projects and making sure you're not taking pups into the business, doing proper work, building up your know-how and knowledge. And, we've got so many projects. We've been progressing them, pretty much them all, even the Alamo project, which has been quiet for some time. We've had some permitting delays there. We were able to crack on with that and announce that to market. We're pushing them all forward. We're pushing them towards those discoveries. I don't know how many will yield a discovery, if any. But I'm confident that we've got within our stable of opportunities at the moment a number of pretty red-hot possibilities.
And what's your favourite of those red-hot possibilities?
Yeah, it's a question I get asked a lot. It's difficult. The first development package that we've built is interesting, because we took on that project in we signed the original deal in January. We had limited information. We had to take a punt, and we did that, and it's paid off big time so far on the information that we're getting from the geological work. If you look at Pilot Mountain, which is in the Golden Metal Resources package, that's a project I was close to when I was on the board of Thor Mining. And for 2 years, we worked hard to increase the awareness of Pilot Mountain in Thor. And the Thor share price went up 10 times on the back of it. So let's hope we can do the same with Golden Metal. Kalahari Copper Belt is close to home because of the T3 discovery with Metal Tiger, and we're back with 4,500 square kilometers of ground. There are so many different possibilities. My favorite, probably Pilot Mountain at the moment, because I know so much about it and I've been so close to it, and I've seen it deliver on a grand scale.
Well, speaking of Pilot Mountain, I've got a question here which I'm not fully fully understand, but maybe you'll understand it. Hopefully you will. After planned further exploration, would GMR/POW be in favor of a PFS study at Pilot Mountain, or look to dispose of the project before reaching that milestone?
Yeah, there's two things that can kill a great exploration project, actually, come to think about it. One is putting the drill bit to work. And then the other thing is doing complicated, long, laborious studies that don't really engage the market. And so many companies have died share price-wise by going into study phases on these projects. If you get the market conditions right, then you can carry it. But there's not a huge amount of news if you're going through a formal study. You've got to be careful with that. There is, in the juniors, a major positive that is often overlooked in the search for production or the search for PFS and all the rest of the study type work that you can do. And that's that what engages the market every day of the week is blue sky exploration potential. What engages the potential buyers of a project is seeing the size of a resource increase dramatically. And I know there is an argument that the higher quality of the resource that you've got and the more technical information about its production economic viability, then that adds value too. But the marginal additional value from exploration work is the biggest winner for a junior. Now, with the Pilot Mountain project, we have the advantage because Thor has undertaken metallurgical testing, it's done a scoping study, it's done a fair amount of that production-focused work, and that's in the bag, as it were. And we see that there is, you know, a dramatic potential for increasing the size and scale of the resource at the project. And we see there is potential for a significant copper deposit at the project. So from our perspective, we're looking at the exploration side, whilst also, of course, pushing along the study-based work that ultimately will need to be done. The US is interesting at the moment because they don't have any primary tungsten, so, you know, mine supply, as it were. This project is one of the better-known deposits, shall we say, in the US. Back in 76, it was sold by Duval Copper to Union Carbide as a tungsten play because Duval didn't find the copper that they were looking for, sold to Union Carbide, who didn't progress it in the 80s because the Chinese marketplace provided vast amounts of tungsten, and it kind of killed the tungsten model, the pricing model. But now it's different because tungsten is needed. It's a critical metal in the States, and there's a lot of interest in tungsten supply. So we've taken an asset into the portfolio that has tremendous strategic potential. We've got tremendous blue sky exploration potential, and we are obviously working quietly as well on the development of the project in the background, and let's see what happens.
All right. Next up is of the data that currently exists in the public domain, I suppose you've got bullseye anomalies, Havieron comparison, Tati, Malopo, Athabasca. Which one has the business transformational potential, the most transformational potential? I suppose it's the same question as before, but out of those.
Yeah, it is. They're different models. We can't just go and launch the same model five times into the spin-out process. Each of them are different. New Ballarat Gold Corporation, where we have 49.9% shared with Red Rock on 50.1%. is 2,334 square kilometers of ground in Victoria, a massive land holding. If you look at the big value plays in Victoria over the last couple of years, they've all been based on big strategic land holdings, and we've got one of the biggest in that package. And there's a team on the ground that are doing lots of exploration work. We have 8 p.m. Monday evening meetings with them, and we find out what's been going on, and obviously it's moving into the IPO phase of its life. So that's one model. You've got the First Development Resources, which is the magnetic bullseyes, big, you know, deep targets. If you strike, it's a jackpot. But of course, the odds of success with these deep targets is quite low. So the risk is high, but the reward is massive. And then you have GMR, which has an established JORC-compliant resource in Pilot Mountain project, and which we think can be significantly increased. But it's a secure asset that has blue sky potential. It's a bit unusual. And in that package of gold and metal is the Golconda Summit project, where we're surrounded by mega million-ounce gold deposits. And, you know, we're hoping to find another one. So it's but it's a different mix, a different portfolio package. And First Class Metals, who are listing in London, have the big strategic land package, multiple projects in the Hemlo Schreiber in Ontario. So many different ways to find big discoveries there. I'm sure they'll be successful as well. So, you know, it's difficult to say which. It's horses for courses, really. It depends on the investor appetite which you would go into. And that, and from our general projects, we like Tarty because we've taken that project from original due diligence through a dramatically rapid exploration program, including recently reverse circulation drilling, and we're waiting, of course, for the results so we can publish to market. And that's a 100% owned project. It demonstrated that when we have 100% of a project, we can really accelerate the work, and that's what we did with Tarty. So it is a bit of a favourite for us because we really pushed it through the process very quickly. This is as someone said, is it the right word? A cornucopia of different opportunities in the business.
That's a big word. Next question is one that's come in from the viewers, saying we're learning so much about the business, which is great, but ultimately we are investing in you, Paul. What does a typical day for you look like?
Right. I use Sleep Cycle because my wife tells me I snore all the time. And I have to say, it's absolutely true. And I get up at 6 a.m. in the morning. And generally speaking, now I'm in the office for about 7. And I tend to leave around the same time, 7 o'clock at night. So it's a circa 12-hour day, 5 days a week. At the weekend with the kids, the kids are into roller skating at the moment on Saturdays. They do 5 hours of it. Can you believe that? And so I get to spend some time with the kids, but I'm working 2 or 3 hours on a Saturday and probably 3 or 4 hours on Sunday. So all overall, probably 70 odd hours a week at the minute. I don't know if that's in breach of anything, and maybe I shouldn't say that.
In breach of health and safety, everything is a breach of health and safety these days.
No, but I love this job, you see. I love doing it. I mean, I love my family as well, of course, but I love this job. I love the fact that we are in a field of dreams and we've got the ability to change our lives. You know, I almost imploded in 2008, at the end of 2008, had a few grand left. I won't bore everyone with the story, but you see the size of my holding and how much cash I put into Power Metal Resources. You know, I'm not poor. And the reason why I'm not poor is because the sector has given me dramatic amounts, not as much as I should have taken from it, in fairness. Greatland example being a classic case in point.
You should have asked me.
Yeah, exactly.
But where did you get out of that anyway?
I've still got shares in Greatland, but I got out a lot of my position. I actually had quite a tough spell in when 2000 and summer 2017, and I needed some cash. So I was looking back at the contract notes a couple of years ago, and I was seeing trades going out, a little bit of stock going out of 0.6 or something. I can't remember the exact figure, but a lot of the stock went out in the twos, because at that point I'd gone from I'd probably made, you know, at that point 1 point something million quid. I can't remember the exact figure. And this was from an investment that I built up, and everyone really did hate it. I remember Greatland used to raise money on a regular basis every year. I'm pretty sure there was an article written saying that you don't need to ask when it's summer. Just wait until Greatland does its June raise. You know,
I'd written that one.
It was a beauty. And yeah. I remember Malcolm Palais, who I set up Mining Maven with a few years ago when I was building my Greatland position. He said, "Will you ever learn?" And I said, "Malcolm, one day, Greatland Gold is going to make me some money." I just didn't realize how much money it could have made me. And it is a field of dreams that our space. The trick now is that the time when you make the money, because now is the time as an investor you get tested, and the market is taking the stock off you. The market is making you look at your shares and question your judgment and question what you're doing and why. It's making people who bought power at higher prices think they're fools. It's denting their pride. It's destroying their confidence. It's making them not buy. It's making them, in some cases, sell and it's destructive, the market. And it, doing it at its most aggressive, just at the time when it's about to turn around. And in my business, I couldn't work the hours I do in this business if I didn't like the job. And I love the job. It's fantastic. I recognize I'm getting older, so I can't do this forever. Hence, this is my last kind of hurrah. But you look at what we can do. On every level, it's a positive being in the metals business. You find a big deposit like the T3, and you look at, go and search the, you know, the Motheo project now in Botswana, and you see the large number of people employed. On a local level, it's amazing. From a metals perspective, we're supplying something the world needs. I mean, anyone can campaign against metals, mining and all the rest, but they campaign usually by driving to the venue in the metal car, having communicated with a friend on their metal dependent phone. You know, everyone needs metals. And the because it's a cyclical business, you get the opportunity for disproportionate gains. But you have to buy your shares and hold them when it feels sickening. And you have to sell them when everyone's having a party at the top. And you have to behave completely opposite what your instinct and what the market and what the bulletin boards and the discussion boards, the Telegram, the, you know, you have to go against what the general consensus is. And then you make big money. There is almost nobody in our space made big money by following the herd.
So, I mean, like, you know, you buy a stock when it's the company's hated like a disease, the management are hated like a disease, the full Monty.
Yeah, when everyone else is questioning and doubting. You know, I look at my business now. I'm a chartered accountant. I'm a reasonably diligent business person on the whole. And I look at what we've crafted and built, and it is an astonishing business. And I would say that because I built it. And the potential of this business, we are set. We've built in difficult market conditions what is an enormous opportunity as the market unfolds. Thank the Lord we didn't build it for today. You know, we built it for tomorrow, and we built it today in difficult market conditions because tomorrow is bright. There is no way on God's good earth that our metal space is going to carry on like this for a long period of time. The dynamic is clear. The opportunity for investors today in our space is clear. It's never been clearer. It is dramatic opportunity. It will change your life, in my opinion. It's changed mine. I hope that it's going to take me to a completely different level. And as someone said to me the other day, you know, in a couple of years, don't worry about the market price today, because in a couple of years, you'll be sat on the beach reading a book, twiddling your toes, happy as Larry, with tens of millions in the bank. The only problem is I get really bored sitting on beaches. So I don't know what I'll do. But I'm looking forward, Zach, and I'm seeing that. The misery that I feel as an investor, because I do, I feel the same misery as other people. I'm right alongside Investors in Power and in other investments generally. The misery I feel, I have to switch on to the second side of my personality, which is the contrarian, and say that peak misery feeling is the perfect indicator that we're about to move. We're about to go as a sector and do very, very well.
Speaking of misery, the next question is, seeing that you couldn't take part in the financing, will you be buying in the market at the first possible opportunity? I suppose you're not allowed to say
that. I love that question. Yeah, I love that question, because there's been a few comments about that. Speculation about what is this money for? Well, you know, we said it, what the money was for in the RNS. And you know what we like as a business, and we're bold and brave, and we do interesting and different things. And there was a suggestion that if I bought on the market, then that would be the end of the hope and the future, you know, for our business, because surely that means a big event couldn't be happening. Well, you know, big events happen all the time. Sometimes they happen quickly. Sometimes they happen slowly. I could buy shares as a director of a company without price sensitive information, and 2 days later, a big event could happen. And then you've got to be careful there, actually, because it can look like you've been buying in possession of inside information. But until deals are got to a certain point, you know, you're not inside, and you just got a form of view, take a judgment. Now, my policy has been to buy on market. I know I bought a lot of shares early on when the price was cheaper. You know, when we first refinanced Power. It was called African Battery Metals then. I bought my stock £50,000 in difficult market conditions, actually. It hurt a bit, to say the least, at 0.5 pence a share, and I got warrants at one. Well, that's when we had no business. All we had was a defunct business that has been suspended pending financial clarification with three legacy projects that no one liked. And we had to rebuild it from the beginning and build it all the way up. And I saw the share price go to 3.5 earlier on this year in January. And of course, you know, my shares that I bought cheaper, my options that I had, my warrants attaching to financings, you know, all went up disproportionately in value. And I've seen that fall by half, you know, and a couple of million quid knocked off my personal balance sheet in the process. And whilst I'm grateful to be able to suffer a £2 million paper loss, it's frustrating as hell. And I share that with people. And as our business has grown and as things have built, you know, we have, I have bought shares on market on a regular basis, pretty chunky amounts. I mean, so far in total, I am about £530,000 invested in cash in the business, and I've been buying at higher levels as we've gone up. I've seen comments sometimes when I bought 500,000 shares at 2.5p, 12.5 grand. People say, oh, well, it's not a lot, really. I tell you what, Zach, if there's people out there that think 12.5 grand isn't a lot of money, I wish I was them, because they've clearly got a vast amount more money than I have. 12.5 grand is an awful lot. But I've backed the company all the way through. I've done it by making sure that where I could, the warrant prices attaching to placings were as aggressive as I could make it at the time. The latest one was 100% premium to the placing price. On the director and team options, because all our team is papered up with options now, the prices of the options are not cheap. The latest batch were at 3.25 pence, but the share price has to do a five-day, I think, VWAP at 5 pence before they go live, those options. So we have to get our price over 5 pence before they're even exercisable. So we've always pushed and been challenging. So, yeah, I think buying on market is something I've always liked to do, and I don't think it's going to change.
Somebody rather nosy is asking what your average buy price in power metal.
Why do they want to know the average buy price? I mean, it's interesting, isn't it?
They want to laugh. They want to laugh at you for your underwater, and if they want to cry if you're in profit.
Let's do it now. What my average buy price is approximately 0.716 pence.
Nice.
So on the principle there, I've got that price because I bought a lot of the stock as the business is growing and developing, and it had nothing to market itself on apart from a bit of ambition, a bit of drive and determination, and the seed of a business, because that's all it was back in Feb 19. Alongside that ambition, we had the shell. Effectively, we had the vehicle. We were ready to go. We had a few legacy projects, and we had to build. And I bought all the way up. And I don't feel any shame in making money off my own investment. I can't actually sell it, you know, because if I sold shares, then the whole world would fall apart. But it demonstrates that I've been able to build up, you know, the value of my investment in power. And as shareholders, you want me to do incredibly well. I've not just got shares, by the way, just to be clear. I've got a circa 60 million options and warrants. A lot of them are at much higher prices than the current, you know, price today. My next batch of warrants are due up in mid-December, 6.25 million at 0.7 pence. We've almost burnt out the 0.7 pence warrants. And the next set are, you know, middle of next year, at 0.75, but we've dramatically consumed our warrant bank, and it's significantly less than where we started. And that warrant money's been ploughed into our business in taking our business forward. You know, we've kept pretty much tightly around the 2 to 2.6 million level on our finance, our working capital over the course of 2021, which means that the millions of pounds that have flowed in from warrant conversions have been applied on a regular basis into our business. We're not sat there building up the cash, paying vast salaries, and then being very comfortable. We're deploying aggressively as the business generates capital.
All right. Just maybe a final question, or near to final question. Somebody said, what do you think of the, well, given that you're an expert in GGP with your entries and exits, what do you think of GGP at the moment?
Oh, well, is that from a personal investment perspective or?
Well, it's just that was the open question. I mean, I suppose it's come back a bit. So maybe it's probably I would assume he's sort of saying, yeah, you know, it's down a bit. Is it all over? Is it this or is it that? That type of thing.
Well, unfortunately, you're not going to get me to be hyper positive about any other share than my own. And neither are you going to get me to slag off any other share than my own. But I will say from my perspective, I've always believed from a personal investment perspective and from a corporate managerial perspective that you buy into opportunities and you stand your biggest return, potential returns, or to make your biggest potential returns when you buy into opportunities that are not loved, not adored, not followed heavily, not high value, and have the potential to go up disproportionately. Now, I am one investor. I like the blue sky. I like the, you know, when we've taken on a project thinking what it could become and how much it could be worth. I'm not into the higher value propositions generally. They don't excite me. I think they provide a degree of additional stability, of course. You know, the Havieron project in GGP has given that vehicle a dramatic amount of underpin. But I'm looking at the upside, and I'm prepared to take the risk corporately and personally on buying into propositions that have that explosive upside potential. Because that's, you know, in our space, in stock market in today's world, there's so many risks flying around. And we've seen some bizarre stuff happen, you know, in the last few years that you never really know. So if you're going to put your money into propositions, you might as well go for the blue sky.
And what do you think will be the turnaround, or, you know, the trigger for, you know, like the big, you know, whoosh in power shares, you know, from 1.5 to 5 or 6 or 10 or whatever it is? Is it a discovery? Is it the overall environment? What, you know, is it you resigning? What would it be?
You know, I used to sit and talk a lot with Terry Grammer, who sadly passed away last year. And he was the chairman of Metal Tiger, and he, when we found the T3 discovery, and he told me a story about it was based around the principle of the speed at which the market turns, and how he was involved in the financing and they had to raise, I don't know, a couple of million Aussie dollars, and they suspended the stock in Australia, and they have a 3-day suspension in Australia when you're financing, and they got to day two and they raised out of the 2 million, they were struggling to get $500,000 together. And then the market turned in 24 hours. And at the end of the third day, they had 2.5-3 million. They'd gone over their target level. And it literally switched in 24 hours. And I've seen that happen in a number of scenarios. It definitely happened in April 20, after the COVID kind of lockdowns. When everyone was worried about this event happening, the event happened. And all of a sudden, we're all kind of sat at home. And there was a switch around in April. I've seen it happen in individual stocks when all of a sudden the enthusiasm just returns and there's no apparent reason why. And sometimes I think we joke about this in the office about, you know, which announcement might suddenly bring the market to life. And it could well be that, you know, there's 4 or 5 investors looking at your stock, and they're all sat at the computer screens on the day you make a release, and they all see it and they all buy at the same time. And suddenly the buying pressure is quite heavy and you're up 20%. And then momentum traders come in, you're up 40%. And then you're on the leaderboard at super high volumes and hundreds of people see you that have never seen you before. And all of a sudden you're off and running. There's nothing that encourages volume than volume. And our job as a, from a marketing perspective, is to follow the 3-step. First of all, awareness. Always build awareness as much as you can. That's what I've done in all my vehicles. You build the awareness, get on people's monitors, even if they're criticizing you. And lots of people are having a go at us at the moment, which I understand. And we have to take those belly punches. But build awareness, get the volume, build the volume up in the stock so it's trading more. Now, it might be in very difficult markets. It's only a few million shares a day, every day, but get the volume up because that's key. And then eventually, if you're doing good things, the price will go as well and the market will come to you. And that's the game we're playing at the moment, is keeping going, keeping focused. We've got a great team. I have to, you know, I feel for the team to a degree because they see what's written about the company. They see what's, you know, the general sentiment out there. We monitor some of it to make sure we pick up the good suggestions along the way. And on occasions, they must wonder, and if you want, you know, well, they are watching now, you know, will Power Metal Resources come to life? You know, is it going to achieve its objectives? Well, yes, it is. Yes, it will. We will not change course. We will drive this business aggressively. And those 3.25 pence options, I expect, will be the Willy Wonka golden tickets in the months and years ahead for this great group of people who, in some cases, have taken enormous risk in their personal lives and in their commercial lives to come on board the powertrain.
I think there's just one question about a new chairman. Is that a relevant question?
Yeah, you go ahead. What's the question?
No, just I think I got this whole question. I just lost it now. But a question is there going to be a new chairman appointed? Is that relevant, or is that totally?
No, it's absolutely fine. We're growing as a business, and you know, we need to make sure that we have the best people in the roles going forward. So recruits into the role of chairman will be, you know, the best person for the job. We also need to expand a little bit, and we need to look at, you know, strengthening the board and looking at the size of the board, because as a business, we're diverse, growing. There's huge demands on us, and there's an important requirement in the market now for independent non-exec directors and truly independent non-exec directors. So we're looking at that as well. just to demonstrate our commitment to growing the business in a professional manner, we've taken on a number of people, you know, with geological skills, administrative skills, managerial skills, communication skills. One important role that we've just taken someone on to do is as commercial manager, to build our database of information we've got a database of information. We need to manage that and make sure it's coordinated effectively. We're building a database of all our licenses with automated renewal procedures and prompts. We're building a database of all of our corporates. We have numerous corporate vehicles. I'm going to put the company structure up on the website soon so people can see what we've built as a business. We're operational across multiple jurisdictions, and each of them has discrete requirements if you're running a company in their jurisdiction. And so we've got somebody full-time to manage our information and our compliance and management of our licenses and our corporates. Board is vital for us to get that right, and we will get that right. We will create the board for the next stage of this company's growth, which is, I believe, to dramatically more successful levels than we've been so far. And yes, that includes, in my view, share price, a board that the market can have confidence in, and that the larger investors who place their trust in us by buying shares can have confidence in.
Okay, well, I think we've run through everything. I think you've had, you've been very honest and open as usual, Paul. I was going to ask you how much you would have made if you sold all your great land out at 38p, but maybe that's, you don't want to talk about other companies, do you?
If I'd have kept every single instrument I had in Greatland Gold all the way through and not had to sell at any point, I would have made the princely sum of 47 or so million pounds.
Wow. Okay.
Actually, that's not true. It's over 50. That demonstrates, you know, what potential we have as a business, that something so not liked, shall we say, because hated is a tough word, not liked, could actually rise so dramatically into, you know, the level of market cap that it's almost impossible to fathom.
It was the same with, you know, Eurasia and Greatland, I suppose, very similar in the way that they had the sort of the haters all the way around, all the way up to £1 billion.
Well, it's funny you mention Eurasia, because back in 2014, or might have been very early 15, we just I put Metal Tiger's money into Kibo Mining, 10 million shares at 1.5p, 10 million warrants at 3. And the share price went on a bender to 12 pence in about 5 or 6 days, I think, after we paid the money, really fast. And I nearly choked on my granola in Pret-a-Manger. I was with Hannah, my daughter. And to see the price go to 12p, because obviously we made a fortune on paper at Metal Tiger. And we deployed some of that cash into Eurasia. And we bought shares at 0.5. And we put 150,000 in at 0.5. We also converted our warrants that were at 1p. And we put another £300,000 in, but that didn't work out too well because the price didn't go off on one. But the reason why we invested was because of Munchie Tundra. And at the time, there were deals being done in the PGM space that were like hundreds of millions. And we thought there is a possibility that something, you know, could transpire. And it did. It just took 5 years, you know. and maybe a bit longer than that, is it? No, about 5 years before Eurasia really kicked off. But it shows, again, if you've got the foresight and strength to invest in things and hold on to them through these wobbly phases, the amount of returns that you can get.
All right, just... finally, just it's almost like an observation, talking about Greatland, Eurasia, and maybe the state you're in the moment, or position you're in the moment, seems to be that the only thing that investors or punters dislike more than a small cap that's not doing well or the share price is not performing is actually a former small cap that goes through the roof. They get, I mean, the kickback against that, it seems to be incredible as well. They get absolutely, they go bananas. I mean, Eurasia had the kick. And still has massive kickback. Greatland, I presume, now has it as well, or has had that. Isn't there something wrong with the psychology of the market there? That's a sort of anti-success type of thing as well.
There might be a bit of that. I think it's if you see these shares go, if your personal holding you bought much higher, you know, and the price collapses over a period of time often, and then you new investors come in and buy the stock much cheaper. Now, if you've suffered an attrition on your portfolio value in that investment, then even if from the lower level the price goes up five times, you're still only getting a fraction of your money back. And I think there's an element of that in the people get a bit frustrated when they see an investment that they believed in previously, that they've lost a lot of money in, that other investors have come in at cheaper prices, been able to buy and build a position and then make a lot of money off a rising price, whereas they will never do that because they're so underwater. Now, of course, you can average down is the common phrase, isn't it? And that's a difficult and dangerous thing to do with many investments. But it is an investment strategy. If fundamentally the company that you bought at higher levels has fallen in price, the business is the same as it was before or better. There's been no fundamental change in that business or its plans operationally or strategically. Then, you know, if it's fallen in price by 50%, it's 50% cheaper. It's not the most pleasant experience to buy an average down, but occasionally it's justified because the fundamentals of the business are exactly the same. It's just cheaper. The famous quote, well, famous to me anyway, for one of the investors, thank you, David, for this, by the way, is that the stock market is the only place where people buy less in a sale.
Yes.
Exactly. It's true.
Well, on that note, Paul Johnson, CEO of Power Metal Resources. Thank you very much indeed. But maybe it was a bit serious tonight, but I suppose we're in a serious type of situation at the moment. So no frivolity this time. Maybe we can be more lighthearted on the next occasion.
Give it a few weeks.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Paul. Cheers. And thanks to everybody for asking the questions as well.
Thank you for listening. Remember to visit our website for more news and other podcasts at www.share-talk.com.